Thank you for spending your New Year's Day with KHSU. I'm Wendy Butler. It's Art Waves time. Peter Santino, Kansas-born, Eureka, California-raised, has spent the past 44 years traveling the world making art, and in no small way. He's erected installations from here to Germany. He specialized at one point in his life in sand paintings. He's shown his regular paintings at galleries internationally. I first met him when we interviewed about his vocation in helping restore historic buildings, including the Carnegie Library, now the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka, where his latest installation is being held through January 20th. The exhibition, At the End of Time, At the End of the World, is in nearly every gallery at the museum, inside and outside. We met at the museum last week. Our interview began at the end of time. A racetrack he's created in one of the galleries.
My original inspiration was to just fill, if I could talk a gallery into letting me do it, fill the gallery with about a foot of dirt and then add water and get a couple of these radio-controlled monster trucks, replace the bodies with the names of artists like Mark Rothko, Jackson Pollock, whatever, and then they would race against each other throughout the gallery space.
Was the outcome determined?
No. It was just an idea. I thought that people would love to see something like that. And then I put it on the back burner. I always wanted to make this racetrack with these radio-controlled monster trucks.
And, why?
I love monster trucks. You know, anybody who ever went to Madison Square Garden and saw those shows, it's just amazing. So it's the fact that they made them in radio-controlled versions, pretty big, just made it really exciting. But the bodies are boring. So I was doing a lot of work with text in those days. So the idea of replacing the bodies with some kind of words was perfect.
You were doing a lot of work in those days with what?
Text.
With text?
Yeah, you know, I mean everything.
As in words, text?
Yeah,
like
yeah
text?
It goes back to 1970. Everything I did was just words, usually.
Oh, okay. Did you do installations of words, paintings of words, just words?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then for a long time, for about 10 years, it was nothing but people's names. So that's where actually, you'll see in the other gallery the ceiling is people's names, artists' names.
And so you left the idea of artists' names and you went for truth and beauty, which are far from being black and white terms.
but it has to do with the whole exhibition theme. It's the end of the world. So this work is entitled The End of Time.
The racetrack is the end of time.
Yes, the racetrack resembles an infinity symbol, which is time. And then what better to race through time than the two aesthetic protagonists, truth and beauty. So they race each other through time. And that would be like in the most beautiful sense of the work, you know, with operators who are perfectly capable of racing these cars. But what happens immediately is that everybody wants to see how much damage they can do to another car or to something else. So it becomes a destruction derby really quickly. You can see all kinds of pieces of the original letters, which blew up on Friday night with lots of people bashing them into each other, which was great. I assumed it was going to happen. I don't believe in the precious object. But I knew they were going to get damaged.
Well, which one suffered less damage, truth or beauty?
I think they both. When I came back in here, I left the room for a couple hours talking to other people. And when I came back in, there were just little scraps of a couple of letters on each car. But the cars were still going full blast around. And there were pieces of letters all over the room. It was kind of great, actually. And I had spare letters already made up. I got two other sets. And what I'm doing right now, when you just came in, is I'm taking the original letters, which are pretty much completely destroyed. I'm piecing them back together, and then I'm going to cover them with a thin layer of wax or clay and do some fiberglass covering on those. So they'll be much more tough. And I'll see if that holds up any better.
Well, let's see how this works. I want to be truth.
Okay. I'll set up beauty in just a second here. I think it'll go all over the place. The, I originally thought that the guardrail, which is a piece of tubing, would kind of help to keep them within the track, but it doesn't. It just becomes a suggestion of mm-hmm. the edge of the track. Yeah, because... sculptural installation, kind of a work of this figure eight infinity symbol just laying here, occupying the entire gallery by itself, quiet, it works as sculpture, right? Mm-hmm. But the minute that somebody puts one of the cars on it, then it adds another level. Mm-hmm. So the cars are part of it. Then the minute those cars are moving, it adds another level. So you just get more and more levels, and you get five or six people in here yelling, screaming, and moving cars around, and it's a lot more fun.
Do you consider yourself a fixer, a worker, a carpenter, a painter, a creator?
I consider myself a painter.
Really?
And that takes care of all the sides of things. It never has mattered to me that much. Whether it was fine art or fixing up the Arkley Center or actually doing the woodwork restoration mm-hmm. in this building, mm-hmm. There's sometimes when I feel that it's more a creative art, fine art kind of thing, mm-hmm. Especially in Europe, where you're treated like a king, and there actually is more of a separation between the fine arts and the restoration technology or something. But here, everybody's trying to get by, make a living however they can, and mm-hmm. I've gotten lucky enough to be able to make a living doing plaster restoration and painting restoration, and which has paid for my art Jones, which never has made money, so.
Because this exhibition is installation. I mean...
Virtually impossible to... non-marketable. Although the paintings upstairs are all... everything's for sale. And the floor you could actually buy a piece of.
Right,
the ceiling, the ceiling you can buy a piece of.
So, but installation is not something that...
Not traditionally a big seller.
Well, that's very different than painting a picture. I mean, that's why I was thinking you were more... I was thinking you were more prone to wanting to do installations and kinetic kind of installations, but you said you're more interested in painting.
Yeah, I've always considered myself just a painter. Huh. But these were ideas that I'd played around with, and I just never got the chance to talk anybody into them over the years.
Well, how does this reflect who you are, would you think, as a character?
I don't think it has much to do with me as a character, other than it was my idea to put together an exhibition themed around the end of the world. And the reason for that was the date, the mm-hmm. coincidence of the timing with the Mayan calendar, mm-hmm. and the fact that I put together a proposal that encompassed the entire museum. So it mm-hmm. had to be somehow tied together. I couldn't just do a painting in one room and a painting in another room that didn't have any relationship to each other. It didn't make any sense. So I tried to tie it all together through this theme of the end, and that's why this room is the racetrack is the end of time.
But it's not actually, because time doesn't end, and this is infinity.
Right. But it is related to time.
Yes, so,
and
that's true.
Everything is related to the end of. Yes. And in the other room we have the end of history.
Let's go to the end of history. Is that the Anderson Gallery?
Yes.
All right, so in the end of history, of course you're using light and shadow as well, because on top of us we see names.
Yeah.
Now, the relevance of the names, I don't know. Jasper Johns, okay. Richard Sarah, okay. Willem de Kooning. Is this part of it? The voices?
Now, the soundtrack is kind of interesting. It basically serves as ambient music in the background, or ambient sound in the background. But in fact, it's...
What is it saying?
It starts with a 10-second clip that was the announcement of the first announcement that Americans received of the Tet Offensive in 1968, in January of 1968. It's lifted from the Walter Cronkite Evening News Report. And those 10 seconds are then first played as the 10 seconds straight. And now what you hear is those 10 seconds stretched to last 44 minutes. So the actual sound of those words can be pulled in software to last 44 minutes. It becomes this kind of almost like a drone in the background. And intermixed with that is, you can hear the sound of tense guy wires stretching. You can also hear the sound of a faint Morse code tapping out. In Morse code, it taps out the end of the world, the end of the world, over and over again. And there's also every once in a while, every minute actually, a French woman says the year. So it starts 1968 and runs until 2012, taking 44 minutes. And then it repeats. So it's every, and it just runs all the time in the background. It doesn't matter when you come in, there's not really a beginning or an end to
it. It's a loop.
It's a loop.
And then so we're hearing the history. History being played out. The end of history?
The end of history.
And we're covered by artists while we're listening to this.
Well, it's all of this 44 years thing has to do with my time as an artist.
Right. That was the beginning of your history as an artist was
68.
Was 68.
Yeah.
Right?
And I've also always tied that to the Tet Offensive. 1968 was a very unusual year, and the Tet Offensive was what started that unusual year. And for a lot of people, it's the beginning of a completely different period in American history. And for me, it was the beginning of my time thinking of myself as an artist. So the two are always tied together. And I've done hundreds of works of art in the last 44 years about that relationship.
About the relationship between the beginning of your art making and the Tet Offensive?
The beginning of 1968, yeah. And that whole, the beginning of the change in America. What really is a kind of a dramatic change. I don't want to get into the whole political side of things, because this is an exhibition about, more than anything, about this period of time and how it, now it's come, the Mayan apocalyptic Mayan prophecy talks about the end of this period of time, not necessarily the end of the world, but the beginning of another period of time after December 21st.
Peter Santino, the exhibition At the End of Time, At the End of the World, is on display at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka through January 20th. I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves. We interviewed at the museum, where his installation runs throughout. This next segment begins in the rotunda, where another part of the exhibit, The End of the World, 1968 to 2012, Fur, is on display.
The pivotal year, 1968, for you, marking that the beginning of your time as an artist or in art making, and I'm wondering, did you not... even in your mind or in scribbles or something, did you not make art before then? And if that's the case, why do you not count that as seriously art making before 1968?
Well, I did lots of things that would be considered art before 1968, but 1968 was sort of like when I decided that that's what my life was going to be.
Well, and it didn't happen simply because of the war.
No, it was there was all kinds of things going on, that was certainly a big part of it. But I also, I felt that it just seemed to coalesce. I mean, it was like an epiphany that's what I was going to be doing at that point. Then, of course, it became necessary to figure out how to make a a living and support that, and that mm-hmm. meant doing all kinds of different things, including coming back up to Eureka. At that time, I was living in Southern California, but I was raised in Eureka, and I came back home and began working on the docks and then working as a commercial fisherman in those days, and set up an art studio on Second Street.
Well, that's what I want to talk about. That's what I want to talk about in a minute, but just to bring us to where we are standing. We are standing on, it's a patterned rug, or it looks like numbers. We're standing on numbers. It's mm-hmm. it's a shag carpet. It's black and white, and there are numbers like number 6, number 8.
1, 9.
There you go.
8.
Okay, 1968, but also here there is a record player and a 45 RPM record and also
a piano.
And so what are you calling this for your exhibition?
Well, this is The End of the World, 1968-2012. That's the official title. The End of the World, 1968-2012, Fur is the actual official title, Fur. Because there's another 1968-2012 End of the World outside, which is made out of grass, sod. So there's two that have that same, that share that title. We were stuck with this piano because the museum, it's always in here, and they always use the rotunda. They never have it exhibits here, except maybe sometimes a little bit on the walls. Mainly they use the rotunda for performance space. So the director of the museum didn't know what to do as far as storage of the piano, and I said, well, I'll just incorporate it. So you have to, you know, art is a business where you have to think on your feet, you know. So I decided that the piano would be a part of the work, and that initially meant just buying sheet music for the piano, and then insisting that if someone wanted to play the piano, they could only play one song, and that which I bought the sheet music for. It's the End of the World, the old 1962 hit by Skeeter Davis. So if you play the piano, and several people, really great piano players, sat down and played it right just beautifully. There's also the option if you don't play the piano but you still want to kind of complete the work.
Is that the song?
You can play the record player, and it's on the 45, it's the same song.
And so how does this extend the theme of your exhibit? All of this that we're standing on.
Well, it's a way of doing something similar to the sand paintings that I've done a great number of over the years. But I wanted it to be a painting that you could walk on rather than the sand paintings you can only observe because you can't touch them. You certainly can't walk on them. They mess up because they're loose sand. So I came up with this idea of using fake fur and putting down a fur floor. There's no logical reason any more than there is a logical reason for having a racetrack with cars on it. It's just it's
the end without an end.
It's it's a work of art, so it exists just for itself. It doesn't have to have a function, really. The floors worked out really well, though. I'm surprised at how well it's lasted. We had lots of volunteers helping to put it down, and it completely changes the rotunda.
And so in the background, we hear the End of History.
Actually, you're hearing
loop.
The another work called The End.
Okay, there's a work called The End. Is that upstairs?
That's in the Balabanas Gallery.
Okay.
It's actually a video projection.
Okay, well, we'll go in there. You started talking about something I wanted to ask you about, the Western Artists Cooperative outlet,
WACO
on Second Street, and it is that building where the C Street Artist Studios are now.
Although they've completely changed it, it was when we were in there in 1970. It was both floors, all open. Well, downstairs it was compartmentalized, and there were some storefronts on Second Street, but it was all empty. And we had about 10, to 20 artists in there sharing whatever space they wanted to use. We had the upstairs was a completely open space. I think it worked out to be something like 40,000 square feet, $100 a month. But it was very difficult to raise that $100 a month. I remember turning in pop bottles more than one occasion to try to get my $10 together to pay the rent.
I'm Wendy Butler, and this is Art Waves, and I'm with Peter Santino in his installation, the exhibition At the End of Time, At the End of the World, at the Morris Graves Museum of Art. And the installation is in nearly every gallery at the museum.
We're sitting in the Balabanis Gallery, and we just watched The End, mm-hmm. and which you created, and which has credits. In the credits are all the people, I guess that you could say, go ahead.
All the people that I've worked with in putting together art shows, or not people necessarily influential, but people that have actually been in the shows with, or people who've helped museum staff, gallery staff, curators.
And we're talking all over the world?
All over the world, yeah.
Since 1968?
68, yeah.
How did it feel?
Up until this point. It doesn't include really anybody from this show.
From the show, okay. How did it feel watching the credits of those people in those different capacities who have influenced your life and helped propel it forward? How did it feel once you put them on there just to see all those names rolling?
That's great, because I can make a visual image of the face of almost everybody. So that's a lot of imagery. It's really wonderful.
Is it kind of overwhelming emotionally?
I've been working on it technically for months, so you sort of work through that stuff when you first, there's the thinking about that person a lot, and then you see the name again and again, and it starts to become just part of the visual image of the whole work, rather than emotional impact at each name. That's it.
We keep talking about the end, obviously, since every single room of the show has something about the end in it. Is this your way, in a sense, of resolving something or ending something?
Well, sure. In a way, it's, I've been doing this kind of work, this kind of big setup, big installation thing since the late 60s, probably more accurately the 70s for sure, up in Seattle. So I'm trying to move to this, to another point now, of just doing very actually very small easel paintings, oil on canvas.
Why do you want to do that?
Why? Because I'm getting too old to manhandle this stuff around, to manhandle scaffolding and get on my knees for 4 days and do sand paintings and things. It's hard. So and also I've never made a dime from any of this stuff. So it'd be nice to make actual transferable objects. If I could figure out the perfect painting to make that kind of sums up a lot of all this stuff, that I make the paintings in this certain way that are incredibly desirable. That's what I want to do. I'm working on it. So I have some upstairs.
But for 40 years, you did lug all the stuff around and made the installations mm-hmm. all over the world. And so that seemed to me to be an important aspect of who you are and continue to be creatively.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. You know, and I wouldn't turn it down if somebody said, if a major museum wanted to do a version of this or something, I certainly wouldn't say no. But I don't expect that to happen too much. I wanted this to be kind of a way of dealing with some of these ideas that I wanted to actually see realized.
And why don't we have Skeeter Davis do another song right now? I think it'd be very appropriate at this point. And this is almost the end of the show, but she sings at the end of the world. Let's watch it.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea
That was Skeeter Davis, The End of the World. And that excerpt was from her performance on The Bobby Lord Show, August 2nd, 1965. I want to thank my guest today, Peter Santino, whose two- and three-dimensional art installation, which prominently features that song, is titled The Exhibition at the End of Time, at the End of the World. And it's at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka through January 20th. The show will be open for Arts Alive this Saturday, 6 to 9 p.m. And regular museum hours are Wednesdays through Sundays, noon to 5 p.m. Thank you for listening to Art Waves, produced for KHSU, located on the campus of Humboldt State University. I'm Wendy Butler, the show's producer, engineer, and host. And I invite you to listen each Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Or you can listen anytime online at khsu.org.